I'm Emily Rooney. This is Boston Public Radio. Well, it's been a crazy week, and yesterday was one of the most jam-packed news days ever. First, we got word that Mayor Menino was going to speak after 6 weeks of silence. Then that Tim Cahill was going to take the stand in his own defense in his corruption trial, which he continues to do today, as you just heard. Then yesterday, we also had that Boylston Street trolley crash that injured dozens of people, followed by a massive blackout in Cambridge, and then not to mention Mitt Romney's lunch with the president. So we have plenty to chew over ourselves here today. Joining me for our week in review, as well as thumbs up, thumbs down, are Boston Herald reporter Dave Wedge, Boston Globe columnist Joanna Weiss, and Peniel Joseph, who's a professor of history at Tufts University and a founding director of the Center for the Study of Race and Democracy. All right, I'm just going to set this up very quickly because Dave Wedge, as you probably know by now, was in the room yesterday when Mayor Menino spoke. There was a couple of people there, a couple of print reporters, and Susan Warnick from Channel 5. And then later they released a portion of the video, a very heavily edited portion of the video and audio. So we're just going to take a couple of clips, and this, keep in mind, it's edited, and some of the sound is butted together. Here is Mayor Menino speaking yesterday from Spalding Rehabilitation Center.
My future? God only knows that. And those decisions are made some other day. But right now, I can't wait to get out of this place. You know, I keep on reading the papers. My staff comes in the daytime. We go over stuff going on in the city hall. But, the city is working out fairly well, and I think everybody's pulling together. You're in the hospital, I've been, I think, 50 days now. It's like, it's wearing.
So it seemed to me, Dave, you were there. Every time he went to make another thought, that was cut off. Like, did he ever say something like, the city is running fine without me? Why was it chopped so heavily like that? I mean, you heard the whole
thing.
Well,
yeah, I mean, self-serving, but I would say, read my story and read the
Globe.
and read the Globe story, and I think you get a fuller picture than the video. You get more of the quotes. I think the Globe even posted a transcript, I believe.
I didn't see it. I couldn't see it.
I thought they did.
I looked for it, but I didn't see it.
But, the answer to your question is that he lost focus occasionally, and he kind of wandered, which the mayors want to do anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But he was on medication, and he has been in the hospital 35 days. And
50.
Not 50.
Oh.
He's
oh,
been
he
in
said
since,
50.
He was mistaken.
Yeah.
He's been in since October 26, which is about 36 days. So, he wandered off track quite a bit, and I think that's probably why, you only got an edited portion, because some of the stuff – didn't really make sense in the context of the questions.
He wandered off track. One of the things, though, that's disturbing about this, and Joanna and Peniel weigh in on this, is it seems like the mayor's office has really tried to control this message. And so yesterday, finally the news media gets in for the first time since not having seen him since he left October 14th for his vacation in Italy. And even the reason they allowed Susan in was to record a message for last night's tree lighting ceremony. That's fine. But then trying to control the news media is another thing. And yet they still tried to do that, by editing this thing so heavily and, just not letting it be natural. Because the spin, that's been coming out of this is, oh, he's doing great and he's running the city. And I'm sure, like all of you, I've been getting these press releases for the last couple of weeks or for the last month. Mayor Menino today this, Mayor Menino today that. I mean, from what we heard and saw yesterday, it doesn't seem possible that he could have that kind of command.
Yeah, no, it sounds like the mayor on sort of 78 RPM. I mean, he just seems like, a little bit of himself, but slowed down. And the pictures are real. It's hard to avoid that impression. Just looking at the picture on the front page of the Globe today, it gives you a little gasp. Like, he just looks, thin.
He looks
gone.
Like he had a stroke. I mean, I'll say it if nobody else will.
There's been a lot of speculation about whether this is a product of medication.
Yeah.
Is he so medicated that that's slowing him down? Is he really sicker than we've been led to believe? Either way, you cannot help but escape with the question of who is running the city. Is the city okay to just run on its own on sort of autopilot? I mean, it's problematic for him. It has been going on too long.
Oh, definitely. We've already heard newspaper reporters talking about not resigning, but just not running for re-election.
Right.
So it'd be great if there was a I don't want to say plan of succession, but just a press release that says, you know, who's going to be really taking care day to day of what's going on in the city.
Well, he's not ready to do that.
He did address some of that during the thing. You know, he said Michael Galvin, who was head of prop building, head of operations or something. He said he's dealing with a lot of the school issues and. You know, he basically said, you know, government is different than it used to be. It's not just the mayor saying, you do this, you do that, or else. We have a team, and he was focusing on the team, and he's confident that his administration is running things well. In his defense, you know, the city is running pretty well. There's not a lot to complain about.
But we haven't had any crises recently.
Right. Yeah. Well, and there are a few things that you want from a mayor. I mean, you want the trains to run on time, literally and figuratively, you know. But you also want someone with a vision, someone who's going to be moving things forward in the city. I mean, this is what we go to an election every 4 years for, is who's got the vision for the city. And the vision is really shrinking if the vision is just, you know, my guys can handle it.
I mean, Dave, not to put you in the spot, and I know you're not a doctor, but – I mean, he seemed to have signs, both in the video and the still photographs, almost like a stroke, that he looked like he was numb in certain portions of his face. I mean, did you ask about stroke or TIA, which are those transient?
His doctors have been asked multiple times if he had a stroke, and they've said no. But, you know, to your point, yeah, he showed signs similar to what someone who has had a stroke would exhibit. I'm not a doctor, but, you know, he looked to me like someone that was really tired. He was having a little bit of trouble speaking, and he was having a little bit of trouble focusing. But again, you know, that's not that uncommon for him, but you add in the medication and the tiredness and, you know, I left there feeling, a little bit, melancholy, you know, that, you know, this guy that's so robust and he's such a big figure in the city and we see him every day out there shaking hands and cutting ribbons. And to see him in a hospital setting like that, to me, on a personal level, was a little bit sad.
Yeah, sure.
But I wouldn't say we're looking at a man that's, you know, in his final days.
No, I just said
I think we're looking at a man who's sick and needs time to recover. And the question is, what Joanna brought up, who's going to run the city? What is the vision going forward? Is it just let's keep things running, or is there a vision to make the city
better?
Goes to
show you how little we know beyond, and there is no number two. I mean, like, who is it? Who's under the mayor?
Steve Murphy, right now.
No, but, you know, he's city council. It's like, but there is no right-hand man or woman in City Hall that I can think of.
He's got some smart. I mean, Mitch Weiss, his chief of staff, is a very smart guy, very competent guy. He's the guy who started that Citizens Connect, the app, which is, I think, amazing. I mean, you write, there's a pothole in this street, and they're fixing it in 2 hours. You know?
But he's an unelected guy. I mean, are we going to go for Mitch Weiss's vision? It might be a good vision, but, you know, what are we looking at in terms of, you know, we've got development projects coming down the line. I mean, there's more than just connecting the dots.
Well, yeah, especially since the reelection of Barack Obama, we know there's the fiscal cliff coming up. We know that the Obama administration has proposed a $50 billion stimulus for infrastructure. Where does Boston fit in starting in 2013?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a critical time. It really is.
No, it is, absolutely.
I mean, it's sad. Let's face it. I mean, I think I'm speaking for all of us here when we say we don't want this to be the case. It appears to be that it's not as good a situation as we've kind of been led to believe. And I went back and looked at that entire news conference from the doctor earlier this week, and, you know, he seemed to be very, very upbeat about, you know, he's mobile and he's walking. Well, you didn't see evidence yesterday that he was walking, and, you know, I don't know if he really can walk on his own.
And he's not. They said he couldn't. They said he's, you know, Dot Joyce, his spokeswoman, said on the record he needs assistance to walk right now, and that's what they're working on with him, is to learn to get to the point where he can walk on his own again. So he's clearly got a long road, and as you said, you know, there's a lot of fiscal issues coming up with the city, and
because of what a strong politician he is and what a huge machine he has, and I think a real fear of him in political circles, there's not a really huge crop of people raising their hands to be the next guy.
Well, everybody's terrified to throw their hat in the ring and be the person that
says. You dared ask him the question. Tell us what happened again when you asked him.
He got pretty mad. I asked, you know, which it showed, you know, his sense of humor is still there, and I asked him, I said, you know, what about these city councilors who are talking about running, or people that are talking about running against you? And he said, and he just gave me a look, and I said, well, what do you think? I mean, should someone run against you? And he said, does your mother-in-law like you?
See, and that's the old Menino, though,
yeah,
you know, just getting out the little dagger.
And it's funny, you know, he does that to me a lot. He likes to give me a hard time, but, you know, I hope the guy makes a full recovery and comes back strong. I just didn't walk away from there feeling real confident that that's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, and I feel like the message has been really, really tightly controlled. Why not just release the video? Let's just, you know, they're so afraid of what, I mean, obviously afraid of what it's going to show that they don't want everybody to see it.
But you're right that by hiding it, it makes people speculate, think things are even worse.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, well, today, day two, Tim Cahill is taking the stand in his own defense. This, of course, all has to do with his 2010 failed run for governor. He was running on an independent ticket. And as you all recall, there was that barrage of ads from the Republican Governors Association, $2 million worth, as a matter of fact, which he felt really hurt his candidacy early on. And then he and his campaign advisors had this idea, or the lottery people. That's the whole issue is here, you know, take out some ads basically defending the performance of the lottery. Tim Cahill wasn't in the ad itself, but it made it look like they were promoting Tim Cahill. So today on the stand was the prosecution's turn, and they start by playing the ads from the Republican Governors Association. Here's that.
State budget's a mess. Treasurer Tim Cahill has made the problem worse, hiring his friends, defending his cronies.
I'm not passing myself off as a reformer, as a good government guy.
Massachusetts needs a fresh start, not more of the same.
Do you recall that as the RGA ad that came out in July of 2010?
Based on what I've seen here, yes.
Okay. Is it fair to say that there's absolutely no mention at all of the lottery in that RGA ad?
Not specifically.
Well, even non-specifically, is it?
It said I made the budget a mess. That was referring to some of the spending at the lottery, I would assume, or it could be inferred. That was in the article that you just showed me, that I was responsible for overspending at the lottery, which, in fact, impacts the budget. So I think there's a reference there, but not specifically, as I said.
So that's the prosecution's tactic there to say, hey, there was no mention of the lottery at all in that ad. It was so, you know, he's saying, so for you to say that you took out ads to protect the reputation of the lottery is not accurate.
You know, my colleague Adrian Walker had a really good column about this a few weeks ago, where he basically said, you know, a lot of people are kind of looking and saying, doesn't everyone who runs the lottery run sort of pro-lottery ads? That the real problem was that Tim Cahill was in the race in this sort of quixotic campaign that really he had no prospect for winning in the first place, and that he sort of got himself down this path, which was an interesting take, I thought.
Yeah, and there, you know, if you look back historically at the lottery, there haven't been a lot of lottery ads with the treasurer in them, and I believe Tim was in some of these, wasn't he?
I don't think he was in it. Somebody clarify that. I don't think Tim was in the ad itself.
Okay.
Bill Galvin is in ads all the time for the Secretary of State's
office.
That's
what I point out. Not that time around, though, not in 2010, even though he was running. And I thought, you know, that's odd because he usually does that around election time. Mm-hmm. He puts himself in the ad. It's paid for by the Secretary of the Commonwealth's office, not by the campaign. But wait a second. He's running for office.
Right.
People have raised questions about that with Bill Galvin before. And then there's also, you know, the infamous Governor Patrick out in the helicopter and touring the storm-ravaged areas around election time.
A law was passed in 2009, I think, that changed that, which is why they weren't supposed to do that anymore, which is why, Tim Cahill is in trouble now.
I mean, to some degree, as an incumbent, you have an advantage. You have a platform. Yeah. I mean, everyone said it helped Barack Obama when Hurricane Sandy hit.
Exactly.
You know, so again, it's a really fine line, I think, between what's sort of the spoils of incumbency and what's actually wrongdoing.
Yeah, on some levels, I think it's similar. Yeah, he was using the spoils or the advantage of incumbency with these ads, but then it becomes, is this illegal? To do, because it's not illegal for Barack Obama to tour New Jersey with Chris Christie, even though it was a great re-election.
Great moment.
We can always admit that.
The crux of the case, I think, for Cahill is going to be for the prosecution to prove that these ad buys were abnormal. Mm-hmm. You know, that this wasn't the normal course of business at the lottery. That there was a so-called bubble in the spending at the lottery. And also,
well, they were wiping out the advertising budget pretty much.
And also, you know, to prove this link, and that's what's going on today, to prove this link between the campaign and the ad buys, and that's what's going on today.
Talking to Dave Wedge from the Boston Herald, Joanna Weiss from the Boston Globe, and Peniel Joseph from Tufts University. I think the other thing, and Adrian Walker really struck on this, Joanna, is Do we really want anything bad to happen to, you know, Tim Cahill? I don't think anybody does.
I don't think anybody
the whole
has
thing is sad.
A reservoir of ill will toward
Not
Tim
at all.
Cahill. No, I mean, I think Adrian mentioned this, that he kind of rose maybe above his level a little bit into, you know, to a certain point in politics and had a little hubris and overshot. But no, I don't think people feel like he's. I mean, on the other hand, you know, we've got a lot of attention on sort of political appointments and patronage, mm-hmm. and he was certainly a part of that whole Beacon Hill culture that is proving problematic in so many different places.
Well, as Peniel said, I mean, is it illegal? You know, I mean, there's bigger hacks out there than Tim Cahill. And, mm-hmm. I've always thought that this case is smacked of partisan politics. You get the whole thing with the RGA trying to knock him out of the race. He was Republican. He was Democrat. He's independent. So I think both he angered both parties. And because of that, he's not a true Democrat. So it was an easy target for Martha Coakley. Mm. So, you know, I
think.
You really
think she would be politically motivated? That seems. That's pretty
do
cynical.
Do I think she would be? Well, Emily, are you going to ask me if I'm cynical? I mean, you know, would she have done this to Deval Patrick if it was, you know, if Deval Patrick had spent on the governor's, you know, spent governor's ad budget? All right.
But he's
so who's cynical now, Emily?
What do you think, Peniel?
Well, no, I think that on one level you can argue it's politically motivated, but I think he's upset a lot of different people in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
But without his candidacy, Deval Patrick wouldn't have been reelected. So on some level,
you don't think so?
Well,
you think without Tim Cahill?
Well, I think it helped. It certainly helped. There was a lot of anger
because he peeled off.
Yeah.
I can't remember what percentage he got. Five, like 8%,
5 or 7 maybe.
Yeah,
yeah, something.
He peeled off about 8%.
Just enough.
Yeah, I think it was just enough. Absolutely. Yeah.
Then it's Charlie Baker who's got the beef, and Charlie Baker's got no pull with Martha Coakley.
Yeah.
Well, it's you know, I don't know. They're talking about the trial going another couple of weeks, so Tim Cahill is probably on the stand for the rest of today, and then we'll see what happens after that.
I mean, right now in Massachusetts, we've got a lot of these cases that are now criminal that in the past were probably ethics issues. You know, the probation thing that's going on. That mm-hmm. There's some people that insist it's not criminal, and Tim Cahill is that. And, you know, so I think that the prosecutors in the state right now are really trying to root out corruption, and in doing that, they're stretching pretty far.
Well, and there's a public frustration with what was, I think, business as usual for a long time. And they're plucking out the easy targets. And some people have argued that Sal DeMasi was an easy target. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, a lot.
Chuck
that,
Turner certainly mm-hmm, was an mm-hmm. easy target.
Yeah, oh, that's ridiculous. All right, so yesterday also the House was calling for the resignation of Judy Ann Bigby. She's, head of the Secretary of the Health and whatever the title is. Anyway, she of course, is responsible for oversight of the New England Compounding Center and for the state drug lab, both of which have been disasters of recent. Today, I think later this afternoon, Governor Deval Patrick is going to address this. But Joanna, is this worthy of a resignation? I mean, yeah, she has oversight of it. She probably didn't even know what the heck it was.
You know, right, mitigating her a little bit is that, the crime lab should never have been under Health and Human Services. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's sort of that's ridiculous. On the other hand, I mean, these are two really big scandals mm-hmm. that have caused deaths, that have got untold millions of dollars. The price tag is still rising with the drug scandal. People back on the street who should not be on the street.
Yeah, it's bad.
So, and I have felt a little bit dissatisfied with Governor Patrick just saying, oh, it's really awful. We can't believe it. I mean, heads have got to roll at some point, and mm-hmm. some lower heads have rolled. But, you get to be the head of the agency. Your head's on the block when something big goes wrong. I think that's part of the deal.
She should probably step down, not force Deval Patrick to.
That would
fire
be the noble thing to do.
Well, we've seen this past year a lot of problems in terms of the Patrick administration, not only with Judy Ann Bigby and Sheila Burgess, but also
she was the highway safety director who had all those violations.
Yeah, and,
yeah.
but with the different Massachusetts housing authorities too, yeah. with the mm-hmm. scandal around that. Ed Rendell, former governor mm-hmm. of Pennsylvania, has a great anecdote about when he was governor of Pennsylvania, he needed more money for schools. And he found out from his budget people that there were, maybe 100 of these kind of Pennsylvania housing authorities. He called up the major head of that and said, I'm using like 90% of your budget for schools, and there's only going to be one person in charge of the Pennsylvania Housing Authority. And that was a conversation, and he ended all of the Pennsylvania housing authorities, these little fiefdoms, in one phone call. Because Ed Rendell is a larger than life political figure. So Patrick,
it's like Morsi kind of tactics, Mohammed Morsi. You know, just like I'm taking charge.
So with Duval Patrick, I think he's a good man. Obviously, he's very intelligent. He gives a great speech, and we saw that at the DNC. Yep. But the ability to sort of just wrap your head around what Joanne called this Beacon Hill culture and make head rolls, it's
same
not
things.
There.
We keep getting better and better when he names his name.
I also think Governor Patrick has had some political problems since the day he took office. He hasn't really ever proven that he's not a part of the old Beacon Hill patronage culture. You know, you look at Marion Walsh, Sheila Burgess again, and
He hasn't learned from his mistakes.
Ron Bell. Mm-hmm. You know, you get person after person after person in his administration that just makes you scratch your head and be like, where is the background checks? Where is the oversight? Where, you know, who's in charge? And all he ever says is, we're going to get to the bottom of it.
And watch me. You know. And so something dramatic has to happen, I agree, today. I mean, I don't know what he's going to say about this. He keeps saying he's getting to the bottom of it. This whole thing about
where's the bottom?
Sheila Burgess,
that's
what I wanna know. It's like... Mm-hmm. How hard is that to find out who hired somebody?
Well, obvious it was a hack hire. I mean, she was a political operative. She had zero transportation experience ever in her career, and she's put in charge of transportation. It made no sense.
And again, this is against the Deval Patrick image of he's the outsider. He's going to come in and hope and glory and fix things up. And you got to actually roll up your sleeves and get your hands dirty.
It's almost ironic that all this, you know, the globe has even turned on Governor Patrick past couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And it's almost it's almost ironic that it's happening right after we had this election with this Democratic wave and everybody's excited about another 4 years with President Obama. And here's our, you know, democratically elected governor who's close with the president just getting his head kicked.
I did hear him admit for the first time last night that he'd been approached by the Obama administration. He did admit that. I don't know who I was listening to, Dan Ray or somebody.
He probably would love to get out.
But I think it shows that democracy is a messy business. And one of the things that even Obama has seen in the last 4 years is that what's interesting is you can't come into these massive institutions and just change things overnight. So, I mean, Patrick, has he been able to do that? Obviously not. But I think he's found that culture is much more pervasive. And it's maybe even connected to some of his right-hand men and women who are telling him these are the way things get
done. It's so daunting when you think about it. I always think about whenever I look at a budget, Penelope, look at all those agencies. And they all feel so redundant and thousands. And you flip through the budgets and then this and then that. Looks to me like there's, 18 domestic violence agencies. And this, why can't there be just one? I just say one housing, one this, one that. If I were governor, I would be so overwhelmed with trying to even know who works for me.
But he should be able to do it because he's not running for re-election.
Well, and the thing is, too, is it's his job to know who's being hired. I mean, obviously, he can't sign off on every hiring, but he put the person in place that hired Sheila Burgess, and he should be able to trust that person's
not
going to hire.
Is that for sure?
Well, I mean, it's his administration. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was hired by one of his cabinet members, so...
He
should know that the person that he puts in charge of hiring for that agency is not going to hire an unqualified hack. He should know that.
Yeah.
But as Peniel said, I think there is this sense that this is the way the wheels get greased. If you want someone to do, if you want a legislator to help you out and be on board, you've got to give them a little something. I mean, that's the culture
he said he was going to change, though.
But I think one thing that we see with certain politicians who get elected and they never had previous CEO experience or running or directing anything is that initially they come in and they're literally overwhelmed. I think it happened to the president of the United States, too. I think the reason why we usually elect, at least from around 64 to 2004, we only elected people who were either former governors or vice presidents is because that they've had some kind of experience overseeing large, very strategically diverse organizations. And the women and men who don't have that experience, they really basically almost get bamboozled by the machine.
But it's his second term now.
I agree. I agree. So there's no defense right now from
all right. Talking to Peniel Joseph from Tufts University, Joanna Weiss from the Boston Globe, and Dave Wedge from the Boston Herald. All right, Dave, another beat you've been following rather closely is the whole casino thing, which got
It's a city issue, Emily.
It is a city issue. It's got really interesting this week. I mean,
it is.
You gotta get a kick out of Steve Wynn comes, you know, blowing into town with his caravan of black SUVs. He's got the slick back dyed brown hair with the carved face and the, you know, he's got all this
very tan, nice white teeth.
If anyone was going to predict that this is what's going to happen when gambling comes to Massachusetts, it's like he's the poster boy for this. Yeah. You know, Vegas has dropped.
Oh my God, it's great, and you know, but it's exciting for the city of Everett too. I mean, they have a legitimate, reasonable proposal. It's something that's going to be competitive to the one at Suffolk Downs.
Yeah.
The mayor hates Steve Wynn. That gives it a great little angle.
Well, I was going to say, it was another great moment in the meeting with the mayor yesterday. It was not only did he said Steve Wynn's going to come in and stick his stinky old nose in. That was funny, but he also gave a little jab at the Everett mayor, Carlo DiMaria. He's a very large Italian man, and the mayor said, doesn't his family does donuts. His family, they're donut makers. That's the mayor, because I guess his family is in the donut business. Yeah. So
What did he mean by that?
You're giving me more faith in Menino the more I hear about this.
I think it was a little jab at, you know, Everett donut maker. That's not Boston. We're better than that. It was a little jab at the Everett mayor. So it is going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, that site over there in Everett they're looking at, I mean, first of all, it's a chemical swamp.
Yeah.
It needs to be completely.
It's a super fun site.
Steve Wynn acknowledged that. He said it's going to be a big project. The question is, you know, what will the Gaming Commission do? Will they look at Suffolk Downs and say they can be up and running faster, better access? At Everett, you're going to have to look at how are you going to get a ramp off 93? How are you going to get that done in less than 10 years?
$500 million.
Well, and then there's this fear of New Hampshire, right? That they're going to just swoop in.
New Hampshire has a pro-gaming governor now, and they have two racetracks that are ready to go. And the difference in New Hampshire is what they'll do. They won't say, we're going to legalize X number of casinos and then determine where they're going to be. They're going to say, they're going to put it on the ballot and say, we're going to put casinos at Seabrook and Rockingham. And that's it. And then once that ink is dry from the governor, they can open their doors. So that's
going to be up and running.
Absolutely, they'll be up and running before Massachusetts.
Well, I think there should be big concerns still about what casinos coming to Massachusetts mean for our civic life. Because Wynn was one of the people who was threatening his own employees in terms of a vote for Obama meant that you were going to lose your job during the election. So people who care about sort of working class Massachusetts, and everybody says if you bring casinos, it's going to help people, jobs, and all these things. Wynn is not exactly the poster boy for sort of helping working and poor people with benefits, health care, child care. So it's really what's going to be the impact wherever this is at? Because on one level, there's going to be a new tax base. But on another level, what does this do to families? We know about domestic violence. We know about poor people next to casinos. Really deleterious effects. So my concern is for the civic life of Boston.
Well, and the New Hampshire threat makes you realize that the economic wonder of the casino is you know, may well not be what it's promised to be. That this is that a lot of urban centers and cities and small towns now see it as this possible panacea. That there's a
finite number of people wanting to entertain themselves by losing their money. I don't understand it. How they think? I mean, I know they're going to have some restaurants and shops and all that stuff, but you know, I don't see that as a draw for that many people.
Well, the thing for Massachusetts is it's, you know, the idea that we're going to be this gambling destination for people from around the country is a complete
it's a joke.
Fiction.
No, it is.
It's going to be what it's going to be is it's going to be a place where Saturday night bachelorette and bachelor parties, 40th birthdays, maybe a couple goes down and has fun. It's going to be a lot of poor people spending their money at the casinos. And there will be some tourism aspect, people in town for conventions and stuff like that. But I'll tell you right now that Springfield Casino is going to be a sad place someday because I've been to Detroit and I've seen the casinos out there. And the MGM Casino in downtown Detroit is one of the most depressing places I've ever been in my life. You walk out the doors and there's just block after block after block of empty buildings that used to be housing for auto workers. And just, you know, these beautiful Gothic old cathedrals that are vacant, broken windows, graffiti. And then you've got this MGM Casino in the middle of it. And there's homeless people outside and hookers. And I'm not saying we're going to see that in Boston, but there's going to be an element to that wherever you put a casino, unless you put it in the middle of the woods like Foxwoods or Mohegan Sun.
So you don't support an urban center?
I mean, I think, you know, Springfield needs it. And I think it's better than the blight that's down there now, but I think you are to trick people into thinking it's going to make Springfield this tourism mecca is not accurate. It's going to be more shifting disposable income. People, instead of going to the restaurant in Holyoke or Chicopee, they're going to go to the casino for
the
night.
And Springfield's got competition now. I mean, now there's this proposal in Holyoke that the mayor is entertaining, and then Palmer. I mean, you know, there's everyone wants to be saved by this thing.
And at the end of the day, Massachusetts waited too long for this. Mm-hmm. We missed it. We should have done it 20 years ago when Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods did it. They captured those dollars, and now it's too late.
I'll go get one better. Back in 1976, they were proposing it for Greylock Glen in North Adams, Massachusetts. It was a huge issue back then.
There's a casino open, operating right now, full-blown casino in Oxford, Maine. So we missed it, you know? Yeah. We missed the boat, yeah. You know?
I mean, you know, the sort of whole the theatrics and the glitz surrounding this, I mean, with Steve Wynn and even the people from Caesars, the entertainment, I mean, is that exciting to people? You know, when Steve Wynn unveiled that, I thought it looked like an overdone kind of like something you'd see in, you know, one of the ski resorts in Idaho or something like that. I mean, you know, the big pillars and, you know. But
it's exciting to mayors. You know what I mean? It's exciting to mayors and certain developers who see dollar signs. But, I'm not sure that it's the general public, even, you know, Joe Schmo in Everett is excited about this tacky palace that could be coming up down the street.
I think there's certain places in Massachusetts where a casino can work, and that's going to be the Gaming Commission's decision. You know, you look at Suffolk Downs or Rainham Park or Plain Ridge Racecourse, they're already there. There's already gaming. It's already regulated. I guess it's going to depend on what Wynn proposes. And I know he hasn't been the greatest guy for the working people, like you mentioned, Peniel, but I'm pretty confident he's not going to build a tacky palace. I think he'll build something.
Well, it depends on your definition of tacky, dude.
I think he'll put a beautiful hotel on the waterfront, and I think that's going to be his proposal, and there'll be a giant casino inside it. I don't think there's going to be spinning Ferris wheels and roller coasters outside, you know, but...
What's wrong with that? You see it like it's a bad thing. I don't know.
Yeah. I like roller coasters.
I know too. We're talking with Tufts University professor Peniel Joseph, Boston Globe columnist Joanna Weiss, and Boston Herald reporter Dave Wedge. When we come back, it's Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down. I'm Emily Rooney. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio. We're talking with Tufts University professor Peniel Joseph, Boston Globe columnist Joanna Weiss, and Boston Herald reporter Dave Wedge. It is time for Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down, where we review quickly the issues, people, and places in the news this week. All right, everybody got their thumbs ready to go on one thing or another. Here's one that I'll start with Dave Wedge with. Thumbs up, thumbs down, Dave. Should Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, and Sammy Sosa make it into the Baseball Hall of Fame? Of course, all were implicated in the steroid era.
I'd say thumbs up.
Joanna's horrified.
No one knows which players were and weren't taking steroids during that era. You've got to assume most of them were, and they were the best of their era. They belong in the Hall of Fame.
No, thumbs down. We know those guys were taking steroids. You got to draw a line. If Lance
Roger
Armstrong
was acquitted,
can be
you don't know
of
Roger
everything.
Clemens was.
Yeah. Roger was
you
acquitted.
Don't know exactly.
Yeah, I'd have to say thumbs up as well, because I think I agree with Dave here is that this whole era, everyone is basically implicated. And when we think about the 1960s...
This is okay for baseball?
No, it's not. I don't think it's okay, and I think they've cleaned it up. I think that in the 60s, people were using amphetamines, and we don't let them not be in the Hall of Fame, even though they were... Mickey Mantle, these great ball players were using illegal amphetamines. So,
Should we have taken Lance Armstrong's prizes away from him?
I think that's a little different because it's an individual sport. It's an individual sport instead of a team sport. I think that's a little bit different.
I can't draw that same distinction.
I mean, and also he did. I guess because he did. He got blatantly caught doping, and you know,
maybe there could be an asterisk gallery.
So you draw the line between blatantly caught and just suspected.
I think in an individual sport like cycling. It's different from a team sport like Major League Baseball, where we know now all 32 teams were actively using steroids.
The whole era is tainted, so you can't cherry pick guys and say, well, he definitely used. I mean, you know, they were the best players.
I happen to be with you. Thumbs up. Let him in.
Excellent.
Uh-oh, three against one.
We did it. We swayed her.
All right, thumbs up, thumbs down on the Canadian town of Kingston arresting a man after he told kids Santa Claus wasn't real.
Thumbs up. That's the meanest thing you can do. So mean.
Oh, thumbs down. You know, the kids have got to, I don't know, kids can deal.
I'm going to tell your kids.
What is it?
One of them already knows.
I'll say thumbs up because they're saying public drunkenness. So he was arrested on a legitimate charge.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that was really it. They were just mad. The parents complained because he was going around telling them.
They don't care if he's drunk otherwise. You can say whatever you want as long
thumbs
as it's
up.
Not about
it's
Santa
up to
Claus.
The parents to tell them. All right. Speaking of ridiculous, thumbs up, thumbs down on parents of a newborn baby swept up in the hysteria of social media, naming her hashtag.
Thumbs down, thumbs down. I mean, you can't saddle a newborn for the rest of their life with, you know, a name like hashtag and getting swept up in the Twitter craze.
Yeah, they need to give people out parenting licenses sometimes, I think. But, you know, I went to college with someone named Caraway Seed, and I don't think she was ever the same.
Gosh.
No, I swear. Yeah.
What'd you call her?
She went by Caraway.
Caraway is fun.
Was her last name Seed?
Her last name was Seed.
That is,
I think,
awful.
Her brother was named Huckleberry. Cool. Yeah.
So should I name my child Orange?
Orange Wedge. Got it.
Oh, that's great.
Apparently
that's
you're not approving of this
down.
One. Yeah, is bad.
So it's right up there with Blanket, Michael Jackson's.
Oh, I know. Or Elijah Blue, Cher. And, you know, that was our generation was the one that got that going with that, all the hippies and all that. So forget
it. This started it all.
Those darn hippies.
All right, where am I here? All right. Oh, thumbs up, thumbs down. I think this is a Herald piece. Do you believe that the Egyptian Popeye's 31-inch arms are all natural? This is this guy, Mustafa Ismail. He's a Milford native. He eats 7 pounds of protein, 9 pounds of carbs, and drinks 3 gallons of water a day. It was cartoon-like. He had the triceps that were like 5 inches
to
drop
below. It's like Wreck-It Ralph. Did you see that movie? Yeah. The 31-inch
arms.
Guy.
Thumbs up, thumbs down, real.
Thumbs down. Test that guy.
Thumbs up. Put him in the Hall of Fame.
Thumbs down. That's not
real.
Yeah.
Thumbs down. Thumbs up. I believed him.
You believed him?
I did.
He ate a lot of carbs, right?
I believed him. I know.
Such a cynical journalist. You're awfully naive sometimes.
All right. Here's another one along the lines of the arrested for telling kids there was no Santa Claus. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Should North Providence, Rhode Island police officers be disciplined for making 4 teenagers do push-ups on a roadside after the teens destroyed some mailboxes?
I love that. That's like the woman in what state was it where she had to hold up a sign that said, I'm an idiot for
that
going
around
a school
That was a little
bus?
Girl.
A woman who drove around a school bus, and her punishment from a judge was to hold up a sign on the side of the road that said, I'm an idiot. I love creative punishment. Mm-hmm. I think it's much better than a little, you know, a fine that the kid's parents are
going to
pay.
Well, now they're trying to discipline the police officers.
Thumbs down on trying to discipline the police officers. I'm all for public shaming as long as they're not hurting the people.
Push-ups, well, it's good for them.
I'd have to say, were the boys let go after doing the push-ups or were they taken in?
No, they were let go.
Oh, then I think that's fine.
Yeah,
those kids would definitely be saying thumbs up.
Yeah, exactly.
Do some push-ups instead of going through court.
I agree. No discipline for the police officers. All right, did you see all this week? I couldn't believe this. This is thumbs up, thumbs down on GQ. Naming people like Mitt Romney and Michelle Obama the least influential people of 2012. What? They were declaring that Michelle Obama, because she was in the anti-obesity campaign and was losing control of that she had no...
Thumbs down. I mean, Mitt Romney
was
just
one of the most...
Yeah, he's one of the most... And Michelle Obama is a fashion icon.
Never mind that. She's
right
one of the most
now.
Influential
so that,
people.
That makes, her, that makes her very influential.
I read that gallery. I was sucked into the ad buying scheme. I mean, it was very tongue-in-cheek. It was in a really obnoxious, super cynical way. It was kind of funny, but Michelle Obama, at least.
I'd say thumbs down. I think they were both influential. Like Dave said, I agreed. Romney running for president was hugely influential in terms of the debate the country had about taxes and other things. Mm-hmm. And Michelle Obama, it's not just obesity. She's done huge things. She just hosted military families. Her and Jill Biden have done huge things for 4 years in terms of with the military, our service of women and men and sort of taking care of them and highlighting their plight.
Yeah. Well, she's an icon.
You don't have to win everything to be influential.
No, she's an icon.
You have to be part of the conversation. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And obviously, Mitt Romney's influential. The president had him for dinner.
Yeah,
so.
That's right.
He's still a player.
All right, here's the one where we have a little bit of conflict of interest right here at WGBH. Thumbs up, thumbs down on the approval of digital billboards. So like on 93 or whatever. But we've got one of the first ones right here overhanging the Massachusetts Turnpike, which I have to admit, I love.
Thumbs up. I love them. That one over by the South Boston Convention Center that the old people complain about.
Yeah.
I love that thing. It has awesome blue man group ads. Yeah, yeah. Like so colorful. They're so vibrant. It adds a lot of life to the city. I love it.
Yeah,
I'd say
thumbs up
as well.
Yeah. Because when we first put ours up, there was a lot of complaining.
I love yours.
It was, people thought it would be distracted drivers, right?
Ours is different every day, too. I mean, a lot of these other billboards would be the same thing.
Most people are parked on that road anyway.
Right.
Gives them something to watch, you know?
All right, moving on right along here. Thumbs up, thumbs down on Entertainment Weekly naming Ben Affleck Entertainer of the Year.
Oh, sure. Thumbs up. Actually, I've heard really good things about Argo. I haven't seen it yet.
I saw
Argo. I'd say thumbs up.
The guy's hot. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. I give it a thumbs up. All right, here's the last and final one. And it's too bad we don't have Mayor Menino out there as the taste police to deal with this. Thumbs up, thumbs down on Trojan giving away vibrators. I can't even believe I'm reading this. Trojan giving away vibrators at the Cyclorama in South Boston on Monday. I don't even know what the point of it is, but thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up. There's a buzz on the street.
Oh! At least it's not City Hall Plaza. Thumbs up.
Well, yeah, thumbs up. People need
time to do what they do. You're like the tis police.
Wait a minute.
What's yours, Emily?
I'll give it a thumbs up. Anything that makes fun, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Anything that's fun.
Let there be fun.
Let there be fun. All right, Dave Wedge, Joanna Weiss, Peniel Joseph, thanks so much for joining us for this week's Week in Review. We're going to be chewing over more in a little while. All right, everybody, have a good weekend. And Edgar B. Herwick is back in Studio 3.
How you doing, Emily? So take a listen to this for a second here. Let's hear some of this.
Bring it up.
All right, so what do you think? Do you think that this
sounds
could
like
be
a cross between the Dropkick Murphys and
A 70s Ethiopian funk band.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so these guys are up for Best Live Artist of the Year at this weekend's Boston Music Awards. Think they're going to win?
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah, they are really good. They're called the Debo Band. We're going to talk about them and some others as we preview the awards.
All right, I like it. I'm Emily Rooney.
I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, and this is Boston Public Radio.